This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletics Center, Seattle Sports Station on 710. Coming up at 5 o'clock, John Morosi will join us on the program. And then 5:15, Cody Barton will step into the room here with us, and we'll talk to him. But he's a guy, Dave, that everybody's talking about Pete feeling validated, vindicated, you know, how satisfying it was. I would imagine you've got a sense of that after the game. Because Cody Barton's been getting a lot of love. People are, as Pete likes to say, people are loving him up.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, if I don't know how I want to say this, but I mean, if you played in the NFL or you've coached, or somebody like Lofa, Paul Moyer. Moyer's a huge like linebacker guy. You know, mm-hmm. he likes to watch the linebackers. You can see that he could play. You know, and then there were some people that were like, oh, he was kind of clumsy and clunky and this and that. And I'm like, you know, everybody has a different style. And I think also he was being compared to Bobby. Bobby is very smooth, mm-hmm. way moved through. But the thing that he lacked was the violence. And Cody has that, man. He had that play on the screen. Helmet comes off. Like, he blew it up, man.
Is that the way he got dinged on that one?
I don't know.
Is that the one?
We'll ask him. I was going to ask him that same, because he stretches his leg out after, too.
Yeah, because he was kind of down for a minute on one knee, right?
Yeah.
Just kind of.
Yeah, he sat on the field for a while, and then you could read his lips. He's like, I'm all right. But he had a couple of open field tackles that were really good. So, yeah, I mean, he can just do it all. Now, we've made this big joke on the show that I'm going to ask Cody to prom, and why is Wyman always blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, this is the reason why. And I guess I don't feel any extra validation, because pretty much anybody who has played, or the scouts and the coaches and all that, they knew that this would happen. I got to say, you know, for Cody, kudos to him for hanging in there, because, you know, he was asked last year, this is year three. I got to imagine it's not the way you planned it. And he said, no, it's not, but I'm hanging in there with it and just made the best of it. So I thought it was, because, you know, as much as we are all banging the drum on Cody Barton, he knows.
Yeah.
He knows he can play. And, if he's looking at somebody in front of him that's not doing what he knows he can do, it's got to be incredibly frustrating.
You know, it's interesting. I'm looking at a tweet from Bob Condotta here. It says, talk to Cody Barton about this play today. And it's blown up the screen. Mm-hmm. He said the Seahawks noticed during the week that Williams had a habit of patting his feet prior to the snap on screen plays, and Barton read it on that play, quote, as soon as I saw the pat, I just shot it, and I knew it was coming. And that's Bob Condotta responding to a tweet from Dan Orlovsky, who you see, he's pointing to the play on his screen here. Yeah. And he says, this play is the reason the Seahawks won.
Hmm.
I don't know, that's a bit of hyperbole maybe, but obviously a huge play there.
Yeah, so that's interesting, the little, tell that he got there. I remember trying to pick those kinds of things up. You know, I thought, like, in the quarterback sneak that Geno had early on, I thought he kind of gave that away a little bit. Mm-hmm. Now, there's not, like, a huge surprise there, but it's kind of like the Russ thing where yelling out run and pass. Like, everybody already knows that. But still, I thought he could have done a little bit better job of kind of disguising that. So, yeah, there's certain body language that you can see. I'm trying to think if I could ever tell. I mean, to me, it was always about the down and distance, the personnel, and the situation. Those were things where, and I don't want to say it's not a, you don't guess, but it's a very educated guess.
Right.
So, but as far as somebody, how they were standing and stuff like that, I got to say, I never really bought into that. I never really sat there and watched for extra little things.
Little tell.
Yeah, if it occurred to me, you know, it looks like this. Because sometimes offensive linemen would lean way over when it was passed. So it looks like a run to try to fool you. And, yeah, I don't know. I'm taking a look at the play right now. And I don't really – yeah, I think the one thing is he does kind of hop. So instead of, like – going up and acting like he's blocking, he would spread his feet out and drop his hips down. He does kind of do a little, but that's once the play starts. I thought it was talking about before course, that would be a legal motion.
Yeah, yeah, we can ask him about it, but it's interesting that he picked up on a tell, if you will, and
that's pretty cool. I mean, that's a guy is studying the heck out of film, right?
Do you think they had to write that into his contract? Or no?
No, the extra film work?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he did that on his
own. Okay.
Unlike the Kyler Murray.
Yeah. Clint Hurt talked about how impressive Cody was on that particular play.
On the screen?
Yeah.
That was an unbelievable play. I mean, those are the ones for like a guy that's not really a young guy anymore. You know, now he's in the year 4, I believe it is, for Cody, if I'm not mistaken. So those are the ones you want to start seeing that guy make, you know, the recognition and IDing certain things, and whether it's recognizing a formation, a backfield set, you know, something a guy does pre-snap, for him to be able to go trigger and make the play that fast, that's really encouraging. So he did a lot of positive things in that game, but he got, you know, things also that he knows he wants to clean up the play even better, which, you know, that excites you for his future.
But that's just testament to film work, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that a perfect example of, hey, had this guy not put in the time, and I don't know if it was extra time or if it was something they all found out in their linebacker meetings or what have you. I don't know where it came up, but just the idea that, hey, we found that. He found it. They found it. Here's a tell. When he does this, here's what they do. And he remembered it and executed.
Yeah, I think, well, and it's a tough one, and one that you really want to know, because screens are brutal. I mean, they're really hard. It looks like it's man-to-man coverage, but we'll ask him. And if it is man-to-man coverage, that's always helpful, because you know exactly, if you're coming out of a zone drop and having to defend it, it's really tough. But, you know, the thing I always looked for is when somebody was trying to fool me, it seemed like the things I would pick up on is that they're trying too hard to make it look like the other.
They're overselling.
They're overacting, Bob. Overacting. So, yeah, that's something that you could pick up kind of during the game a little bit. So, yeah, that was a huge play. I mean, at that time, of course, I can't tell the down and distance or see the clock because of the stupid NFL rewind.
Come on,
website.
Boomer.
Yeah. Oh, but it's better.
Yeah, it's so much more efficient and streamlined. Pete Carroll, this is a huge compliment, says Cody was KJ-like on that screen.
He had two really big plays. The sack was a great adjustment he made on the rush, too. It wasn't just a typical thing that happened. And he showed good savvy and confidence to go ahead and adjust the pattern that he was coming with. But the play he makes, you know, that's totally coming from the gut. You know, that's a KJ Wright play. You know, he sees it and he knows what it is, the screen. He's got to beat the lineman. He can feel the lineman coming out, and he dipped him and made a great tackle on a great back in a crucial time for a big loss, you know, and all that. That's a, you know, it's a great indicator of things to come.
Yeah, he said he dipped him there. So, you know, at the last second, he was running sort of to the outside, and he got his shoulder underneath the tackle. Mm-hmm. So the guy couldn't get a hand on him. So
that's high praise, though, to be compared to KJ.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about his knack for blowing up screens and just being that guy who was able to do that consistently. So to be compared to him, that's high praise.
Screens are difficult, man. You really, I mean, especially like I said, when you are dropped back in zone and you're like 10 yards away. And so you're running up there. You don't know if the guy's going to plow you, or I'm talking about the lineman, or cut you. And typically I would get cut because they pretty much knew from watching film that I was going to try to plow most people. You know, I'm not this one.
He's going to engage.
Yeah, so I actually learned this from Rusty Tillman, the late, great Rusty Tillman, who I was, you know, was my special team coach and linebacker coach. But, you know, just let yourself get cut. You know, get cut and then bounce back up off the ground, actually, is better. So, you know, obviously it's better if you could just avoid it. But if you don't know, just go in full speed and then let it
go down, jump back up,
pop up like toast, like Clint Hurt likes to say.
He wasn't telling you to try to hurdle them or anything.
Well, I did do that a couple of times. I actually had a hit on Joe Montana where I knew that Marcus Allen was going to cut me. It's when they were both with the Chiefs. And so, you know, and again, I benefited from that because everybody knew I was going to try to run him over. So I'm running in there and Marcus Allen tries to cut me, and I just jumped over.
Do you see him like looking down?
Yep. Jumped over him and then, you know, hit Joe Montana, and he didn't look too, I mean, he was really old then, Joe Montana was. So I felt like that one really hurt him.
He played pretty well, though, in Kansas City, didn't he? It wasn't like he was a shell of his former self, or, you know, this is sad to watch kind of thing.
Yeah.
He wasn't Joe Namath with the Rams.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's one of those little games within a game that you play out on the field is between offensive linemen and linebackers and D-line is where you, whether you cut them. I mean, if you're a good cut block guy, some of these offensive linemen are really good at it. There's a guy named Brian Millard that I played with.
What's the difference between, I mean, what makes somebody good at a cut block? It seems
they sell it. They you don't see it coming.
Okay.
Yeah, you think he's going to take you on.
So it's a setup.
High. Yeah, like Brian Millard used to, at the very end, put his head up really high, and that's kind of the overacting thing where after a while you can kind of pick up on it. But he would put his head up like really high like he's going to do, and then dip down at the last second. A lot of quickness, too, involved. Okay. But, yeah, there's a little thing going on between linebackers and offensive linemen in that regard, especially out in space. But, yeah, screen is, you know, it looks like it's a drop-back pass. Now, all of a sudden, two or three linemen sort of go over. They can't be downfield, mm-hmm. so they kind of move to the side, and then the running back dips over there, and they're off to the races. And you're running up there, and you're going, okay, do I look at the running back or do I look at the lineman? Because the first thing is taking on the lineman. But KJ, he just had a knack of, like, he talked about dipping underneath blocks, that he had a really good knack for that, and then he just had early recognition. Like, he picked it up before everybody else.
Yeah.
We should have asked him that. We get KJ, you know, what makes you so good at the screen play? So, yeah, Cody looked really good. I think for most, you know, NFL sort of people or whatever, it's not that big of a surprise. But, you know, there was a little bit of me going, well, maybe, you know, let's see how he plays, you know, and this is just one game, but
yeah.
Every chance he's gotten, it's been like this pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, like every player, he doesn't make every play, but if you're just going to say, well, of all of the opportunities he's had, it's been much more positive.
Yeah.
Then, you know, when Bobby got hurt last year and he finally got a chance to start, like, he'd been coming in the middle of games and situations like that. But, all right, he gets the week to prepare. What does he look like? I remember that conversation last year.
Right.
And he played really, really well.
Gets to Arizona.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. So it was just, you know, seems like a fait accompli that he was, you know, you get the opportunity, you give him a training camp, and he knows his position. He knows his role. We're going to see it. You're right. It's week one. It's game one. It's, you know, it's the classic overreaction, good or bad. If your team went out and won, you're like, oh, we're going to the playoffs, the Super Bowl. If your team lost, what a joke. They didn't do this well. They're going to be terrible. What a disaster. It's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to hear and read a lot of what's written after week one. But I'm curious, and people can text in on this, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Did this win change your mind at all about the season? Did you have a prediction in mind whether you thought it was going to be, you know, double-digit wins or single-digit wins? Did this change you one way or the other?
I'm trying to not be that guy that, you know, just drastically change. The biggest surprise by far, and again, it's not like I'm dogging Geno Smith. I just didn't know that he had that in him. A couple of the play to Disley, there was another throw to Godwin. Good one where he did a really good job of keeping his eyes up. I just didn't think he had that. The other thing is I swear last year we talked about he shouldn't throw on the run. He's not good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he could have sailed that throw to Disley, and he kind of did. It
a little
was
bit.
Pretty high.
Yeah, he kind of did a big rainbow.
Yeah, but, I mean, it worked. I just that was as good of a scramble that you would see in week one anywhere in the NFL, whether it's Patrick Mahomes. If that was Patrick Mahomes or Justin Herbert, everybody would be going, that was an amazing play. And I'm sure they said it about him, but I just didn't think he had that in him. Now, can he do it week after week after week? Cody's a different story because we've seen, you know, he had, I think, four starts his rookie year that he played really well at middle linebacker. That's mm-hmm. his spot. You know, when he was playing outside, remember I told you about when you have the edge, you can't take on too much of the blocker.
Right.
And he took on too much of the blocker.
So people would get to the outside.
Yeah. So he didn't keep his outside arm free. And, you know, and then during the preseason, we saw a little bit of that. He does get caught up in little personal battles. That's what my coach used to call it. No personal battles. I know you want to hit that guy, but the play's going.
Is that too much of taking on the block? Is that too much
of getting too focused? Like, you're supposed to get rid of the blocker as soon as possible. That's what we were talking earlier. Jamal Adams is fantastic at that. Like, he separates, either throws him or just runs around him, but he has the hit and he hits hard. But then that's it. He's not going to, you know, hit him again and again and again. And, you know, sometimes linebackers can get caught up in which coach? I'm trying to remember which coach. I think it was Rusty Tillman that said, don't get caught up in personal battles. So, you know, that's something I think sometimes you see Cody do. But like I said, every time he's gotten a chance, and that's where it's different from Geno, we'll just see with Geno. I just have not seen that from him. Everything Cody did, I thought the most special play he had was his sack, because he had to run to his right and then really cut the corner to get back to the left. So I thought that was the more athletic play. But, yeah, the screen was at a really key time.
Yeah, I like that. The 253 says it's 509. Is this the equivalent of the M starting 13-0 that one year, where that we got really excited and they faded? It could be. We don't know. It's one game. There are 16 games left to go. There was so much put on this matchup. This was unlike any other season opener. I mean, you know, even more so than the first game against the Packers after the Super Bowl, right? A huge celebration out there watching Soundgarden play pregame. It was a great day, and there was so much hype, and they're coming back. They're running it back. But this was different. There was just a weird intensity to it because of Russell, because of everything, all the upheaval of the roster, everything, new coaches. It was just different. And I think, you know, this story is obviously far from being told, but we're going to get a really clear picture of who they are this week, I think. Because of what you and Paul both talking about, the defense they're going to be facing off against, that's no joke. That's you know, when you've got Bosa and you've got Warner and people like that, that's, you've got your hands full. So we're going to see what the offense is. Are they more like the first half, or are they going to be more like the second half? Because those are two distinct outcome differences in the offense that we saw in that one game. Maybe they're somewhere in between. Maybe they're not quite as efficient and effective as Geno specifically in that first half, but not quite, you know, throwing for 31 yards and three possessions, two punts and a fumble. You know, maybe there's going to be somewhere they'll sort of just rest in between, something like that.
Yeah, that would be the next big thing if they could get a ton of takeaways.
Yeah.
You know, and taking Jamal out is definitely puts a dent in that. But it's not one I'm not going to overreact over it. And they barely beat them, and they had a touchdown to go ahead, and it got called back because of a holding penalty, and kind of forgot about that a little bit. So, yeah, there's still a ways to go. This is going to be a really tough test. And when you and I were going through the schedule and going, okay, you know, and I thought, well, maybe we can beat Denver on the road, San Francisco, I think we both agreed that it's going to be a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would be more surprised by a win in this game, even though Trey Lance didn't light it up week one. You're at home. That's a different defense. That's a different level of defense, in my opinion, than what you just faced. The win against the Broncos felt more likely than this one does. Is that fair? I just felt like...
Nobody was giving them a chance, that's for sure.
Yeah, we talked. I know Vegas called them 6.5 points, and you know, if some of those things, you know, you talk about the penalty brought back that touchdown. I mean, it's not often you have back-to-back drives where they fumble the ball on the 1 yard line, and they were in position to put some points on the board, and they killed themselves too. But I thought, yeah, I could see Russ really pressing in front of the crowd. He's being booed. You kind of anticipated they were going to be hyped up, like maybe they're not going to be the rest of the season, perhaps. It felt like, yeah, they could win. I was picking I thought Denver would win. I said if I had to go to Vegas and bet my own money,
yeah,
I'd put it just straight up winner. I'd bet on the Broncos. But I wasn't going to be surprised at all if Seattle won. Just felt like one of those kind of toss-up games. This one, for me, I feel like would be a much more impressive win if they were able to go out there and beat San Francisco, even though Trey Lance, again, didn't light it up week one. I understand that. But I just think you're facing something different defensively.
Yeah, I think that Trey Lance, the Trey Lance thing, well, going into the Denver game, first of all, the further the week went on, the more it became obvious to me anyway that the only real difference was at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everything else, they had tons of question marks. Their linebackers were not very good.
And they were missing some their starting O-linemen.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So. Yeah.
And their O-line was just okay. And, you know, their tight end situation, I mean, they ended up, couple of catches. The guy on the one drive had two, but that's just because of a breakdown. by the Seahawks defensively. So, yeah, they pretty much matched up with them. But I think this is going to be a real battle. But, you know, I'm going to – if I had to predict, I guess I would say it's going to be hard for them to win. That's the way I would put it. But if they do and Geno plays like he did, especially in the first half – you know, like I said, in the second half, he had a pass knocked down, and if you take that away, he was like 63%. So he wasn't like dynamic like he was in the first half, but he was still good. It was good enough to win. It was a winning effort.
All right, coming up, there's one rule change coming to baseball next year that should give the Mariners a big advantage. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
A little programming update. Hey, Dave, I'm hoping you'll be able to soldier on through the rest of the show. But
I didn't know Cody was such a diva.
Cody. Wow. Cody Barton apparently has to, once they're done with meetings, has to get the heck out of here. So he is not going to join us today, but we'll have Boye Mafe joining us at 5:30. So the good news is we were going to have to cut John Morosi short because they were both going to happen in the same segment.
Yeah.
So we were going to have an abbreviated version of Morosi and then bring in Cody. But now we get a full segment with John Morosi, which you can't cut him short. That's not how that works. So he'll join us at 5:00, and then at 5:30 we'll have Boye Mafe.
Maybe Cody found out that, you know, what the creepy things that everybody says, and he's like, I don't want to be in a small room, locked in a small room.
That's actually what I asked the PR guy who came in and just broke the news to us. I said, "Is Dave making him uncomfortable?
Yeah,
is that what that's about?
Creepy. No, Cody and I are tight. Yeah." He's okay.
I said, does he know how Dave feels about him? Is that why he's not coming? So, yes, a little for those of you that have been listening throughout and we've been promoting Cody Barton, he will not be with us today. I'm certain we'll get him at some point soon. But today, Boye Mafe will join us at 5:30, and then we'll get a full segment of John Morosi.
Yeah, well, it's good because I don't think that I have heard from Boye Mafe.
I was asking you during the break. Yeah. I don't recall hearing his voice. So
no, I think right when he got drafted, definitely. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, so it'll be good to talk to him.
Yeah. So that is coming up at 5:30. John Morosi of MLB Network at 5:00 as he joins us for his weekly appearance. We were talking about the rule change, and boy, I was listening to some of the game on the radio yesterday as I was driving around, but it Riz just leaning on the rule, you know, next year, you're not going to be able to see that. You're not going to see that next year. he's so funny the way he throws that in there. And a 3-1 pitch, hey, you're not going to see that next year either.
Well, he's getting us ready, man.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And obviously the shift, banning the shift, you're going to have, for those that aren't aware, you're going to have two players on either side of second base, and they need to be in the dirt. They can't be standing in shallow right field or shallow left field.
And remember, I think we talked to Stanton about that. Yeah, because he was big on the rules change, that it's not going to be like a cone coming from second base. It's going to be a shape behind the base. It's going to be a straight line.
Yeah.
So you can, theoretically, run over there when the pitch is thrown.
Yeah, yeah. If somebody wants to move at the last second, you know, you're looking at your card there, and hey, this guy pulls the ball, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah, you can create the shift on the run.
Yeah. Setting up like that.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, how – is that a little bit more of a risk? It's going to be a little bit harder play. You're not standing still and reacting. You're moving and reacting.
It could be kind of fun in that you're going to maybe see more of the athleticism of some of these guys. Like maybe they are on the move and the ball gets hit and they're really going to have to lay out for it because they're not just already planted in that spot. So some of those plays still may be made by the more athletic infielders. We'll see. I don't think any of us really know how impactful it's going to be. It feels like, you know, with as many balls as we see just throwing it out there, the short right fielder make, right? We see it all the time, you know, and if that's not there anymore, if that person is not there anymore, are we going to see hit after hit after hit, or is it going to not be as extreme as we think it's going to be? But Jerry DePoto on with Brock and Salk talked about just how much easier he thinks it may be on the offense.
It stands to reason that hitting is going to get easier and there will be less a focus on whether a player is adjustable in his swing. And, you know, back to the days of the, you know, the pull hitter is an effective thing. And right now, pull hitters have been muted. But the rest of it is very much in line with what we've been doing in minor league or even in amateur baseball. You know, the pitch clocks, and we're still looking for athletes who can play baseball is the, at the end of the day, how we'll scout them.
Yeah, I don't remember if it was Son of Augustifson or maybe it was Shannon or somebody, maybe Alex Mayer or Adam Gresh. We're talking about how the shift will benefit, like, is it Carlos Santana? There was a couple other players that were the most shifted on players in Major League.
Yeah, I think Santana's up there.
Yeah, Santana was 98.7%. He's the most shifted on player in baseball.
Right.
That's crazy.
So an advantage for him. The one thing of the rules that really bothered me the most was that, and I think they called it like the Javier Baez rule, that like if you have a really, let's say a player tends to hit the ball to the left side of the field, mm-hmm. over to shortstop, third base area, and you have your best fielder is second, the second baseman, you can't shift him over to play shortstop. That one bothered me because the other one is about just a strategy in general, but now it's like you can't put your best player over there. Because it's not fair.
Yeah, I think you should be able to do what you want. You want to put your center fielder at shortstop, do it. If that's what you think is going to work, why they're your players to – that's why I'm so torn on this. Part of me loves it because I think it will add to the offense. Maybe you'll see averages start to go up and, you know – a lot of these balls that would normally in traditional times be base hits have been outs at one after another. So it's going to help create action. It's going to get guys on base. It's going to create the action that a lot of people long for. But there's also that part that says, well, adjust to it. Make them pay. We see it in the NFL all the time when somebody comes out with a new offense, the Wildcat. What are they going to do? The run and shoot. What are they going to do? You know, any of that stuff. Eventually people adjust. And baseball, in my opinion, has been very slow to adjust. And I know Stanton took exception to it when I was saying, hey, at this level, you should be able to lay down a bunt. And then he said, well, you try standing in there with the 98-mile-an-hour fastball coming at you. Well, I'm not a professional baseball player. I'm not an elite baseball player like these guys. They're the best in the world. That's a fundamental thing you should be able to do here and there to make these defenses pay. You know, so I wanted to see them make them pay for the shift. All right, they're going to give you an entire side of the field. Make it hurt.
Yeah.
And you really didn't see it often enough to you know, satisfy me anyway as a baseball fan. So I'm torn in that as a manager, you should be able to put the players wherever you want. You want to throw every one of them on the right side of the field, help yourself. But somebody's going to make you pay the price if you do that. Yeah. But it should be up to you as you see fit. It's kind of like I'm going to use an opener. I'm not going with a starter. I'm going to use a bullpen guy to start the game, and then I'm going to bring in somebody else. Yeah. Take her with it. You create how you want to create. It's your painting. Use your paints the way you want to use them.
Yeah, ultimately, but on that one, it's about a strategy, right? And the other one is like about a person.
Yeah.
So to me, like it's like saying, I'm sorry, you can't put Aaron Judge up in that situation to pinch hit or something like that.
Yeah.
Because that part bothered me. But yeah, I do. On one hand, I think, you know, saying, well, you try to go and hit that bunt. But on the other hand, it's also like it's pretty hard for those guys, too, you know, for Major League Baseball players. But if you work on it enough, I suppose that would do it. I guess the overreaction to baseball, maybe baseball has just been behind the times. But they were making the point on the big conference that they had I think it was Manfred that said, the NFL and NBA change all the time. They're mm-hmm. constantly changing their rules, and you know we really have never done that. So, you know, like the NBA, for whatever reason, I just became aware of this, that there's an offensive rebound shot clock. You know, there's the regular shot clock since 1954 in the NBA has been 24 seconds.
Right.
But then when there's an offensive rebound, there's a 14 second shot clock that goes up.
Is it really?
Yeah. Did you not know that?
No.
Yeah, I didn't. I had never. I was like, oh, my God, you're kidding.
When did that come into existence?
2014.
Really?
Yeah.
Because when I first came back to town, I was dialed in the NBA. I still loved it, but we don't talk about it because people get upset out here. There's no team. So you got to divide your attention to the sports people want to hear about. So I've really lost touch with the NBA, and certainly that I was not aware of.
Well, that's not, you know, that's not that long ago, I guess 2014, as opposed to no, actually, let's see, they adopted. Okay, it was actually 2018.
Okay.
The NBA adopted it in 2018, but FIBA, I'm not sure what that stands for, adopted this in 2014. And the WNBA also observes the same rule of a 14 second. So there's an offensive rebound, and there's a 14. So, you know, that's just part of moving it along. It used to be, you know, you'd think it would be, okay, we get a new shot clock.
Yeah, resets. That's interesting.
They've done things, and the NFL have done things to move the games along.
All right. Coming up, is Russell Wilson already starting to annoy members of the Broncos defense? We'll hear about that when we sweep the dial. It is Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, NFL Films does a great job of miking up players, kind of putting out some unique content. And today they put out a clip of Russell Wilson, mic'd up, sitting on the bench, yelling instructions to the Broncos defenders during the game.
Hey, sideline, run a pass! Hey, you gotta let them know. Come on, commit to it. You gotta let them know. Run a pass. Let's go. Gotta let them know. Run a pass. Run a pass. Let them know. 9-6. Let them know. Run a pass. Let them know. Run a pass. Nice and loud. Pass.
Bumpus and I agreed on this one that in high school, yes, run, you know, yell out run or pass. Mm-hmm. But. Yeah, in the pros, no. I mean, if you don't know if it's run or pass and you're on the field, and by the way, it's not going to come. You're not going to go, oh, I'm glad they were calling pass because I thought it was a run on the sidelines. I mean, it's also too loud. But what's the harm in that? There's no harm in that. It's kind of weird by Russ, and I think it's a little on the cheesy side. But, you know, the tweet that was put out, it said he demanded that they do this, and I'm like, he's just trying to be a good teammate. It's corny. But
Does it happen anywhere? I've never noticed it, but
yeah,
you'd have to be on the sidelines or have somebody mic'd up in order to hear it. So does it happen when teams go to Kansas City and it's extremely loud? How do we know it doesn't? I've never even thought of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. The headline's sensational, and it's they're trying to get people to click. And
I think when you're starting in Pee Wee football in high school, that's being a good teammate, and let's all be into the game. And it's coaches' ways of getting teenagers to not be looking in the stands and screwing around on the sidelines. And Russ implemented it in the NFL. Which
was that for the noise, or he's trying to help out the?
No, just helping the defense. Identify whether it's a run or a pass. it's pretty right. Funny, but it's not the way the guy put it was like Russell's demanding this. Like, it's not hurting anything, but it's kind of weird.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, how about Tariq Woolen goes from raw, relatively new cornerback to starting in the season opener, and Pete Carroll says actually Richard Sherman was a big help in getting Woolen ready for this game.
Sherman just kind of hung with us, you know. He was there and to kind of talk about what was happening and all. He didn't go into great depth on stuff. He knew that we needed to really respect the process and not try to fill his head with a bunch of things. Sherman handled it beautifully, but he was there for him, you know, just there for him to kind of walk off the field and stuff like that, you know, and just answer any questions and things, and I thought he was really, really supportive, and it worked out nicely, you know, under the circumstances.
From everything I've heard from Sherm, on the sidelines, when he puts the headphones on when he was playing, and he describes the game, and that I've heard him coach guys up, like, that dude should be a coach.
Oh, yeah. There's been no debate about his football IQ and the way he sees the field and sees the game. It's just interesting. I wonder if he and Pete had a sit down, come to Jesus meeting to iron things out. Because we talked about it briefly yesterday. He didn't leave on great terms. There were some shots fired, and you know, we had all those texts just tearing into Sherman for a while after he left, and you know, he was persona non grata, and now we love him again, and Pete loves him, and he's helpful, and it's. I wonder what led to that. If they had a hey, let's sit down and talk.
Yeah, it could be. I don't think Pete took it personally in the beginning. I remember when he said all those things, people were asking Pete, and he's like, I know Richard Sherman more than anybody could know Richard Sherman. So he understood what it was all about. But it could be, you know, we always talk about guys coming back. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, 4 years, whatever, it's all's going to be forgiven.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, on with Brock and Salk this morning, Jerry DePoto was asked about more of these rule changes like we talked about, and he actually named a couple of guys on the Mariners who could really benefit from this ban on the shift.
Tough to say. You know, I do think that organizationally, we've got a few left-hand hitters who, you know, certainly will benefit. In the minor leagues, I would say right now, Jared Kelnick is someone who, just watching stylistically over the course of the last few years, seems, you know, a logical benefactor in this way. I also think Cal Raleigh is like the benefit to some degree. But I think if you look at our team and the success that we've had offensively this year, that success has been in part due to the fact that we don't get too hung up on pulling the ball all the time. Our players do move it around the field.
Translation, Kelnick likes to pull the ball a lot, unlike Ty France, Julio, even Mitch, to an extent, they use the whole field, you know. So you've got guys who, obviously, the most shifted on player in baseball.
Santana.
How is he the most shifted on hitter in all of Major League Baseball? 98% of the time, that's
Carlos.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. But you know, if that's your trend, and I would say I would have to believe Seager when he was here was that guy too, because he was consistently hitting into the shift.
Well, do you think that that's going to make a player's career? When this rule change, will it lead to somebody like, when they got rid of the shift, that's where he took off? Or is it going to be like eventually the game finds you and, you know, spits you out?
Yeah. I don't think it takes a... that's a good question. Not a great one, but a good one.
Yes.
I think we're all kind of wondering, and we'll talk to John Morosi. He's coming up in the next segment here, so we'll ask him. But I could see it making a big difference in a guy's average. Now, is it going to be the difference between a minor leaguer and a major leaguer? I don't know about that. I don't know.
All right, how about this specifically? Kelly.
Jerry seems to believe it's going to be very helpful to him. And if there's a guy that just is a power pull guy who just doesn't really hit the other way, doesn't go up the middle very often, and everything's to his strong side, his pull side, then, how does it not help him? I mean, so if that's who he is and he's just not a guy who's going to go the other way with the outside pitch, he's going to try to pull everything, I don't know how it doesn't help him. Now, how big of a difference is it? I don't know. That we'll all find out together. But, we can talk to John about that. Because I don't think anybody really knows how impactful this is or is not going to be.
I feel like it's going to be like a, you'll see some numbers bump a little bit. So for a guy like Carlos Santana, you might see his numbers bump a little bit. But I don't know. I still think that the game, like I said, it finds you. It spits you out, chews you up, and spits you out, whether you make a shift or not.
Boy, that's vicious. Yeah. All right, coming up, John Morosi will join us. We'll talk about this final 20-game stretch for the Mariners season, get his take on the new rules and what kind of a difference he thinks it's going to make in the sport. That's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.